So the presentation, is the sound okay? Because I can take my shoes off. No, sorry. Okay. The presentation I'm going to be doing was actually my doctoral dissertation. So I've spent probably about 6 years with this data. I know it inside and out. And if I glaze over some points, please stop me and ask questions. I have no financial disclosures, but one giant thank you, which is to the National Institutes for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH, who funded my doctoral dissertation. So the presentation objective is very simple. We're going to go through the public health significance section, study aims, methods, results, and a discussion. When I submitted the abstract for this conference, I did not know the role that PPE, specifically for Ebola, was going to play as we came into the conference session here in November and the cases going back through earlier this year. So I think you'll find this data pretty interesting now, given the context that we're in. So I left this actually intact based on when I did the dissertation data, and the data has changed now. There's about 18 million healthcare workers in about 800,000 facilities. And the reason why this is important, I think Bureau of Labor Statistics data shows about 18 million healthcare workers. But for those of you that don't know the contributing factors to Bureau of Labor Statistics, it is just really established for collecting data for the private sector. So for a combination of public sector, private sector, add probably about 5 to 7 million more. So let's say about 25 million healthcare workers in about 800,000 to 850,000 facilities. So largest growth sector, it has been for many years. The dynamic is changing within healthcare, as you all know really well, because of the Affordable Care Act and the need to really change over beds a lot more frequently. Still about 35 million patient discharges per year. Why that's interesting related to occupational exposure to infectious disease is as people with HIV and AIDS are living longer, their opportunity to go back into the healthcare system is actually higher. So we're seeing a lot more comorbidities with HIV and multi-drug resistant organisms like MRSA. Back when I did the data, it was about 46 per thousand MRSA positive patients, and this is for infection and colonization. Now, based on Dr. Jarvis's data that he did for APIC about 3 years ago, it's at 66. Per 1,000 patients for MRSA positivity, and that's again colonization and infection. What's interesting about looking at splash and splatter data, which is what this is going to be about, is the additive factor between occupational exposure to infectious disease, typically contact and aerosol driven, in partner with bloodborne pathogens, which is obviously blood to blood or blood to mucous membranes. Is the two together for blood splashes and splatters or body fluid splashes and splatters, where you have this additive degree of not only bloodborne pathogens, but also more typical infectious disease. I am an industrial hygienist, or I started as an industrial hygienist. I have no idea what I am now. But what we know for the modes of prevention is really within the hierarchy of controls. So where we have this kind of general policy administrative control at the higher end where we know there's risk high enough where we have a national policy for it. So the dissertation that I did was really to look at the impact between sharp injuries and mucocutaneous or splashes or splatters to the eyes, nose, and mouth to the face, and whether they were changing over time or not based on national policy. So in that mind, I put the needle stick safety and prevention at kind of at the top of this hierarchy because we're putting in place a national policy which is intended to reduce exposure over time. Of course, engineering controls and at the lower end, personal protective equipment. However, I call this upending the hierarchy. We've spent a lot of time now talking about Ebola virus disease and personal protective equipment. We've spent a lot of time talking about the use of PPE in order to protect healthcare workers from splashes and splatters, mostly to the face or to mucous membranes, which are the highest exposures, or sorry, the highest risk exposures for seroconversion, where we're relying on the use of PPE without really understanding what compliance with PPE is. So we have this gap of time where a patient generally walks in feeling unwell to an emergency department. There are specific steps that are taken. Maybe they're wearing gloves or not to do blood draws, sending the blood to a lab to determine whether the case is, let's say, Ebola or whatever else, suspected or confirmed. And it's only then that really personal protective equipment is put into place beyond just what we think traditionally with gloves or maybe isolation gowns. Working up sweat up here. Maybe my arm movement's too much because this mic is so low. Hopefully not for you guys. So in summary, healthcare is the largest work sector. Let's move down to the lower bullets. We've spent a lot of previous focus on national policy for engineering controls and not personal protective equipment. And now we seem to be spending a lot of national time on personal protective equipment and not engineering controls. And I say that just to set the stage for what compliance actually looks like. So here's the research. Again, I told you it was really to look at the difference over time between percutaneous or sharps injuries, needle stick injuries, as they compared to splashes and splatters to the face. I'll just tell you what that data showed of 6 years of collecting data. There was no difference. Over time, with the intervention period between 2000 and 2002, the Needle Stick Safety and Prevention Act came into being to the time that it was enforced by OSHA, and I was an OSHA enforcement officer at the time. So 5 years before, 5 years after, no difference between needle sticks and mucocutaneous splashes and splatters, which means that the national policy made no difference to a healthcare worker based on their risk for a needle stick or splash. Because that showed no difference, I spent more time on the data looking at compliance with PPE, because if exposures were happening readily, I thought, well, why? What does compliance with PPE look like? So I looked at it based on risk area, high-risk areas in a hospital being OR, surgery, OB, lower-risk areas being outside the patient's room in a clinic, you know, traditional lower-risk areas. So I used EpiNet data. How many of you are familiar with the EpiNet? Yeah, if anybody does needle sticks, you all know it pretty well. It's the largest data set that currently exists, 68 hospitals overall. Over about 32,000 incidents, and again, it was 5 years post Needle Stick Safety and Prevention Act, OSHA Bloodborne Pathogen Standard, and then 5 years after. I looked at, again, whether people were wearing PPE when they had exposure, and if they had an exposure, were they wearing the appropriate PPE? Meaning, if they had an exposure to the eye, were they wearing goggles? If they had an exposure to the nose, were they wearing a face mask or surgical mask or a respirator. And high risk, we've already defined, time period, we've already defined. So hypothesis one was that healthcare workers in high risk settings are having more exposures. Kind of a no-brainer, but you know, when you go through the actual research, no-brainers are not always no-brainers. So here's what the data looks like. For high risk hospital areas, this is again, only splashes and splatters to the face or mucocutaneous incidents, 66% are happening in high risk. It's kind of what we've already known. 34% are happening in lower risk, and again, almost, you know, overarching, 79% are happening to the eyes. So that's just kind of what it looks like. So when we look at who's wearing PPE, 75% of the incidents, remember the same incidents, the splash and splatter incidents, for people who are wearing PPE, 75% of those people work in high-risk hospital areas or get that exposure when they're working in a high-risk hospital area. 39% evenly were wearing eyeglasses. So what's wrong with eyeglasses? It's not really PPE, right? It's considered a physical barrier to a splash or splatter to the eyes, but it wouldn't be considered traditional PPE for industrial hygienists. But because it creates that physical barrier, there may be a lower risk to somebody who has a splash or splatter to the eyes, you know, purely just from the physical barrier. Also depends on the size of the eyeglasses. And then 39%, again, are wearing masks. So I did logistic regression for nearly all of these. With low risk as the referent group, which means that it's more likely by 1.5 times that somebody is wearing PPE in a high-risk setting, which is not really all that interesting because you would anticipate somebody who works in an OR wearing personal protective equipment. The majority of people were wearing a mask, which also makes sense for infection prevention and control reasons. Goggles was lower, but it was not statistically significant. So the second one is actually the most interesting. If you got a splash or splatter to the eyes, nose, or mouth, were you wearing the right PPE? The answer is no. So if we move down to, let's see, nose and mouth, and then move all the way to the right, only 2% of people in a low risk and only 3% of people in a high risk who had an exposure to the nose or mouth were wearing the appropriate PPE. 2 to 3%. This is 32,000 exposures over almost 13 years, before and after the Needle Stick Safety and Prevention Act and before and after the incorporation of that act into the bloodborne pathogen standard. Granted, these are not needle sticks, but the heightened awareness of blood exposures during that time is what I thought would be meaningful. What this shows also for eyes is that, of the people who have an exposure to the eyes, 65% of them in high risk are wearing the appropriate eye protection, but only 22% over this entire time period were wearing personal protective equipment to the eyes when they had an eye exposure. This is worse than hand hygiene, y'all. I mean, it's pretty low. And again, with low risk being the referent group, it was 1.5 times more likely that they were wearing the appropriate personal protective equipment when they worked in high risk, despite a similar exposure happening. So we covered this. So what I expected to find was that PPE was being worn more and more frequently in high risk. Also expected that masks were being worn and more frequently in high risk, because a lot of the data actually comes from surgical data. So you would anticipate in surgery they're wearing masks. What I didn't expect is that there was no difference over time in the reduction of injuries when you compare percutaneous injuries to splash and splatters, despite there being the Needle Stick Safety and Prevention Act in there. Eyeglasses were worn the majority of time in high risk, which is weird because if you can't see when you're a surgeon, you can't see when you're a nurse and you're in a cath lab or at the patient's bedside, bad eyesight is bad eyesight. But apparently, people have more bad eyesight when they work in a high-risk hospital area, even though glass eyeglasses are not considered PPE. And it's being worn less appropriately, and I do not say this to place any blame on the worker. I've been doing occupational safety and health my whole career. It's just to say poor and or less appropriately means not so good. What's interesting is on the refute side, the CDC actually has said in all of the reports I've seen, this is the very last bullet on the right side, that mucocutaneous splash and splatter incidents are not occurring frequently. This data actually shows that it's occurring quite frequently, and that it's not occurring so much so for high-risk mucocutaneous incidents in the higher-risk hospital settings. It's actually occurring more frequently in the lower-risk hospital settings. If we look over to implications, I think number 3 has the most importance right now as we're really thinking about guidance for healthcare workers and wearing personal protective equipment when we're thinking about emerging infectious diseases like Ebola, that we can't create an overarching recommendation to wear PPE when we don't even have an idea about what the compliance is with normal PPE use overall. So we really need to pay a lot more attention on compliance. And also, moving over to the right side, because I only looked at face exposures and not full body exposures, this data set, it is what it is. So if we had looked overall at full body exposures, I think that we might find a role for other protective apparel other than just personal protective equipment that people are wearing in between the time when a patient shows up generally unwell at the ER to when their diagnosis is confirmed. That's the end of my presentation, and I come from a long line of healthcare workers, and this is for them. Thank you, healthcare workers. Without you, there would be no healthcare. Stay safe, be well.